Chapter 5, The Constant Creation of the Physical Body. Reading from The Nature of Personal Reality, a Seth book by Jane Roberts. Beginning Chapter 5. The Constant Creation of the Physical Body. As mentioned in Chapter 4, the conscious body is a portion of the inner self, that part that surfaces, so to speak, to meet physical reality more or less directly. You are mainly concerned now with physical orientation and the corporal materialization of inner reality. Therefore, the conscious mind holds in ready access the information that you require for effective day-to-day living. It is not necessary that you hold in steady consciousness data that does not directly apply to what you consider your physical reality at any given time. As soon as the need for such data, aid, information, or knowledge arises, then it is immediately forthcoming, unless your own conscious beliefs cause a barrier. The exquisite, precise, and concentrated focus of your conscious mind is quite necessary in physical life. It is because of this highly selective quality that you can tune into the particular range of activity that is physical. In their own way, animals also possess this selective consciousness. They also focus their attention in very specific directions, perceiving from a vast general field of perception stimuli that is recognized and accepted in an organized manner. Now, the animals' conscious minds, connected with their physical brains, make this necessary selectivity possible. Without it, there would be an out-of-focus effect that would make physical survival impossible, so certain portions of the inner self come to the foreground of being. Now, new sentence. Because your mind in life is connected with the brain and physical organism, it is automatically attuned to corporal reality, and to some extent, of course, it ignores some non-physical data that lies within any given field of perception. Quite simply, it does not allow it into its organizing perceptions. The data is then blocked out. Again, this is quite necessary. There is some information and data that does not apply to physical reality. Some of it is perceived by non-physical entities who organize it into their system of reality, where it does have meaning, but we will not be concerned with it here. While you are physical, then, you will always be concentrating upon certain data to the exclusion of other data. In other kinds of realities, you may ignore the physical stream entirely, however, focusing instead upon those systems of existence that are not now recognized within your own. In your physical life, the conscious mind assesses physical reality and has behind it all the energy, power, and ability of the inner self at its disposal. Any information that it requires will be available. Its job is to assess that reality effectively, using the fine focus mentioned earlier. Because of its character, consciousness, or the conscious mind, cannot be swamped by too much detail, too much information. The inner self sends to it only the information it asks for or feels necessary. To a very large extent, then, conscious beliefs act as great liberators of such inner data, or as inhibitors of it. Are you following me? Rob notes, yes. Seth asked the question because of a prolonged burst of hammering from the apartment below us. 1016. Seth. The conscious mind is itself developing and expanding. It is not a thing. It learns through experience and through the effects of its behavior. The inner self brings about whatever results the conscious mind desires. It does not leave the conscious mind at loose ends, nor isolate it from the fountains of its own being. Because the conscious mind is part of the inner self, it is obviously made of the same energy, filled with the same vitality, and revitalized by the deep sources of creativity from which all beings emerge. You must understand that it is not cut off from the inner self. The inner self keeps the physical body alive even as it formed it. The miraculous, constant translation of spirit into flesh is carried on with inexhaustible energy by these inner portions of being. But in all cases, the inner self looks to the conscious mind for its assessment of the body's condition and reality. and forms the image in line with the conscious mind's beliefs. So once more, you form reality through your beliefs, and your most intimate production is your physical body. Your beliefs about it are constantly fed into inner data. You organize, on an unconscious level, the atoms and molecules that compose your cells to form your body. But the blueprint is made of your conscious beliefs. To change your body, you must change your beliefs, even in the face of physical data or evidence that conflicts. You each have a body and you each have a consciousness. You can practice with these ideas by applying them to your body. For now, we are taking into consideration the fact that, generally speaking, you are not going to make yourself 5 physical feet taller if you are a grown adult already, because there are certain physical laws with which you must contend. We will discuss those more fully later. In that context, you can even appear taller and affect others as if you were, which would usually be what you wanted in any case under the circumstances. But except for some conditions which will be mentioned later, you can become healthier if you are ill, slim if you are overweight, gain weight if you prefer, or alter your physical image in profound fashion through the use of your ideas and beliefs. They form the blueprint by which you make your body, whether you have known this or not. Your body is an artistic creation, formed and constantly maintained at unconscious levels, but quite in line with your beliefs about what and who you are. You may take a break. Rob Notes Break 10:37 through 10:55. Seth, now. Dictation. You constantly give yourself suggestions about your body, your health, or ill health. You think about your body often, then. You send a barrage of beliefs and instructions to the inner self that affect your physical image. As I mentioned earlier, your thoughts have a very definite vital reality. Beliefs are thoughts reinforced by imagination and emotion concerning the nature of your reality. Now, thoughts in general possess an electromagnetic reality, but whether you know it or not, they also have an inner sound value. You know the importance of exterior sound. It is used as a method of communication, but it is also a byproduct of many other events, and it affects the physical atmosphere. Now, the same is true about what I will call inner sound, the sound of your thoughts within your own head. I am not speaking here of body noises, though you are usually oblivious to these also. Inner sounds have an even greater effect than exterior ones upon your body. They affect the atoms and molecules that compose your cells. In many respects, it is true to say that you speak your body, but the speaking is interior. The same kind of sound built the pyramids. It was not sound that you would hear with your physical ears. Such inner sound forms your bone and flesh. The sound exists connected with, but quite apart from, the mental words you use in thinking. Rob notes, it might be noted here that Seth devoted a group of sessions last November, December, and January to some of the meanings and uses of inner and outer sound. That material was new to us and included information on the Egyptians' use of inaudible sound to help build the pyramids. According to Seth, the Romans also employed such sound in erecting the enormous, truly awesome city of Helopius at Baalek, in what is now the Middle Eastern country of Lebanon. See the continuation of these notes at the end of the session. Seth, it does not matter in which language you are addressing yourself, for example. The sound is formed by your intent, and the same intent, I am putting this simply now, will have the same sound effect upon the body regardless of the words used. As Seth, Jane paused during her delivery, notes Rob, she evidently changed her mind about just what to say and how to say it. Seth, but usually you think in your own language, and so in quite practical terms, the words and the intent merge. For all practical purposes, then, the two are one. When you say, I am tired, mentally you are not only giving silent messages to yourself. I say messages rather than message, because the general statement is broken down. Many portions of the body must be affected before you feel tired. But inside this, the inner sound value of the messages automatically affects the body in just that way. What should you do, then, if you find yourself feeling tired? This is your conscious assessment of your body's reality at a given time. You want to change it, so you do not reinforce it. Instead, you say mentally that the body can now begin to rest and refresh itself. You take your initial judgment for granted then without restating it, and instead suggest the remedy be carried out. Rob notes positively. Seth, you can, if the conditions warrant, physically rest by lying down or making whatever adjustments seem appropriate. If none are possible, then several such suggestions that the body can refresh itself will give you benefit. To tell yourself over and over that you are tired, however, reinforces the condition. The inner sound value of the countering suggestion automatically begins to refresh the body. It is fashionable now to think about noise pollution, yet the same kind of circumstances occur with the inner sound, particularly when your inner thoughts are contradictory, scrambled, and random. Diverse and highly conflicting instructions are then given to the body. As you should know, the body's inner environment changes constantly, and it is you who change it. Change is quite necessary, and as a rule, the body's overall material is maintained. But the directions that you give are often not clear or advantageous, and your beliefs largely determine the kind of information you send to that environment. The inner self always attempts to maintain the body's equilibrium and health, but many times your own beliefs prevent it from coming to your aid with even half of the energy available to it. Often, only when you are in dire straits do you open up the doors to this great energy, when it is much too clear that your previous beliefs and behavior have not worked. You have at your disposal the means to ensure your health. My friend Joseph, Rob notes, as Seth calls me, Seth, brought up a point concerning this before our session. He wanted to know why so many in this country wore glasses. I wondered if people unacquainted with glasses and suddenly introduced to them would develop a need for them, and they would. Many individuals are given glasses to correct an eye difficulty at an early age. Left alone, in many cases, the eyes would correct themselves. The glasses can impede any such self-correction by providing a crutch that further weakens eye muscles, for example, and instead fixes the condition. When you believe that only glasses will correct poor vision, then only glasses will. Instead, you must discover the reason for the belief behind the physically poor function or non-function, and if this is done, the condition will automatically clear up. Now, for most people, it is easier to get glasses. We will end dictation. Rob notes, okay, Seth, we will be going into the medical profession, and it is too late for that. Now Rupert should go along with the continuing relaxation sessions as they occur and try to capture his mental state then in ordinary times. And I bid you a fond good evening. Rob notes, good evening, Seth. Thank you very much. Seth, tell him that my energy has always been available to him. He can use it freely and fully. It will not negate or block out my existence. It is available at all times, and it is also his by right and mine by right. It belongs to all beings by right. It is simply manifested in many ways at many times. And good night. Rob notes, good night. End at 11:37. Jane still felt more or less relaxed. Floppy, she laughed. I haven't done a damn thing since 3 o'clock this afternoon except get supper and have the session, and right now I feel pretty fine. We think her relaxation follows naturally enough in the wake of her prolonged intense psychic activity. She had no session Monday night, for instance, nor did Seth come through in ESP class last night, and she's already called off her writing class for this Thursday afternoon. Adding to the 11:05 note on sound, the 1971 through 72 sessions mentioned there also contained much about the inner meanings of sound and Jane's development and use of samari. And once again, I refer the reader to her introduction. As Seth told us, samari effectively blocks the automatic translation of inner experience into everyday verbal stereotypes. One of its services will be to teach Jane to free her inner cognitions enough so that she can translate speaker manuscripts without distorting them all out of proportion. As with Samari, we expect that references to the speakers will be included in this book from time to time. In reincarnational terms, the speakers are teaching personalities who reach across the centuries. Seth commented in chapter 20 of Seth Speaks, "The speakers, more than most, are highly active through all aspects of existence, whether physical or non-physical, waking or sleeping, between lives or at other levels of reality. Ironically, many of the very ancient speakers' manuscripts are entirely verbal. They weren't put into writing because of the beliefs of the times." Now, continuing chapter 5, session 624, October 30, 1972. Seth, "Now, good evening." Rob, "Good evening, Seth." Seth, "We will continue dictation. To be healthy, you must believe in health. A good physician is a changer of beliefs. He will replace an idea of illness with one of health. Whatever methods or drugs he uses will not be effective unless this change of belief takes place. Unfortunately, when man became a labeler, he also made maps, so to speak, of great complexity, categorizing various diseases with greater effectiveness than ever before. He studied dead tissue to discover the nature of disease that killed it. Physicians began to think of men as carriers of disease and diseases, which, in certain terms, they, the physicians, did themselves create through some new medical procedures. The old medicine men often dealt far more directly with the patient himself and understood the nature of beliefs and the prime importance of suggestion. Many of their techniques were adopted for their psychological shock value, in which the patient was quite effectively brainwashed out of the disease he believed that he had. The present medical profession is sadly hampered because of its own beliefs. Often it operates as a framework in which poor health and disease are not only accepted as normal, but the concepts behind them strengthened. Here you have again, as in psychoanalysis, a hide-and-seek arrangement in which both doctor and patient take part." Rob notes, see the 616th session in chapter 2. Seth, "Both believe they need the other, of course. Behind this is the psychic pattern of beliefs in which the patient often assigns to the doctor the powers of knowledge and wisdom that his beliefs have taught him he does not have. Knowing otherwise, the patient still wants to consider the doctor omnipotent. Upon the patient, a doctor often assigns and projects his own feelings of helplessness against which he combats. The interactions continue with the patient trying to please the doctor, and at best merely changing from one group of symptoms to another. Far too often, the doctor shares the patient's unshakable belief in poor health and disease. Not only this, but the medical profession often provides blueprints for diseases, and the patient, too, often tries them on for size. This is not to say that the medical profession often is not of great aid and benefit, but within the value system in which it operates, much of its positive influence is negated. Because they are held in such high esteem, the suggestions given by doctors are paid particular attention. The patient's emotional condition is such that he or she readily accepts statements made under such circumstances less critically than usual. The naming and labeling of diseases is a harmful practice that to a large extent denies the innate mobility and ever-changing quality of the psyche as expressed in flesh. You are told that you have something. Out of the blue, it has attacked you, and your most intimate organs, perhaps. You are usually told that your emotions or beliefs or system of values have nothing to do with the unfortunate circumstances that beset you. The patient, therefore, often feels relatively powerless and at the mercy of any stray virus that might come along. The facts are that you choose even the kind of illnesses that you have according to the nature of your beliefs. You are immune from ill health as long as you believe that you are. These are quite practical statements. Your body has an overall body consciousness filled with energy and vitality. It automatically rights any imbalances. But your conscious beliefs also affect this body consciousness. Your muscles believe what you tell them about themselves. So does every other portion of your physical body. While you believe that only doctors can cure you, you had better go to them, because in the framework of your beliefs, they are the only people who can help you. But the framework itself is limiting, and again, while you may be cured of one difficulty, you will only replace it with another as long as your beliefs cause you to have physical problems. Now, the same applies to what is frequently called spiritual healing. If through the concentrated use of psychic energy your body is cured by such a healer, you will also simply trade those symptoms for others unless you change your initial beliefs. Now, sometimes a healer or a doctor, with his effectiveness in healing a condition, will show you by inference that the healing energy was always within yourself, and this realization may be enough to allow you to change your beliefs about health entirely. In such a case, you will realize that your previous ill health was caused by your belief. If you have any physical problems, concentrate instead upon the healthy portions of your body and the unimpeded functions that you have. In the healthy areas, your beliefs are working for you. As I mentioned in the last session, inner sounds are extremely important. Each of the atoms and molecules that compose your body has its own reality and sound values that you do not hear physically. Each organ of your body then has its own unique sound value too. When there is something wrong, the inner sounds are discordant. The unharmonious sounds have become a part of that portion of the body as a result of the inner sound of your own thought beliefs. That is why it is vital that you not reinforce these inner sounds through repeating the same negative suggestions to yourself. Verbal suggestions are translated into inner sound. This passes through your body in somewhat the same way that some kinds of light do. You may take a break. Rob Notes 1027 through 1035. Seth. Now, while you are physical creatures, then your perceptions must be largely physically oriented. Even your bodies exist in other terms than you usually suppose. You perceive them as objects with bulk, composed of bone and flesh. They also have structures of sound, light, and electromagnetic properties that you do not perceive. These are all connected with the physical image that you know. Any physical disabilities will show themselves in these other structures initially. The sound, light, and electromagnetic patterns give strength and vitality to the physical form that you recognize. They are more mobile than the physical body, and even more susceptible to the changing patterns of your own thought and emotion. I told you that thoughts are translated into this inner sound, but thoughts always attempt to materialize themselves also. As such, they are incipient images, collectors of energy. They build up their own embryonic form until it is, in one way or another, physically translated. Mental images, therefore, are extremely powerful, combining inner sounds and its effects with a clear mental picture, which will seek physical form. The imagination adds motivating and propelling power to such images, and so you will find that many of your beliefs are entertained by you in an inner visual manner. They have mental pictures connected with them. One such image may represent one particular belief, or it may stand for several. As you make lists of your beliefs, you will find some of these pictures coming into your mind. Look at them as you would a painting you have created. If you do not like what you see, then quite consciously change the picture in your mind. These images are interior, yet because they are so a part of your beliefs, you will see them exteriorized also in your experience. Let me give you a simple example. You have a sore toe. Now and then you see it quite clearly in your mind. You may find yourself looking at the toe more frequently than usual, and you may also find yourself picking out from the populace anyone who is not walking properly. These people might escape your notice ordinarily, but suddenly the world seems to be full of sore toes. We are dealing, to make a point, with a belief already made physical. But if you continued such concentration, the toe either would not heal or would develop into a worse condition. Behind all this, of course, would be the belief that caused the difficulty. But once you have brought about a group of symptoms, you must be very careful that you do not begin to view your field of reality from that position. When you do, you add both inner and outer images that reinforce the condition. There is a light, then, that you do not see with physical eyes. as there is sound that you do not hear with your ears. These combine to mentally form the physical image that you know. So you must work from the inside out. Your beliefs are your palette. Using the analogy of a painting again, your thoughts give the general outline of the reality that you physically experience. Your emotions will fill the patterns with light. Your imagination will forge these together. The sound of your inner thoughts is the medium that you actually use. This is far more than an analogy, however, for in simple terms it explains quite clearly the way in which your beliefs form your reality. In quiet moments, the word Om, said slowly, mentally, or aloud, will be a benefit in toning up your general physical condition. The sound contains within built-in impetus toward energy and well-being, as I will explain shortly. Now I'm going to end for this evening. I will resume, however, at our next session. If you have questions, I will answer them. Rob, no. Then I bid you a fond good evening. Rob, the same to you, Seth. Seth, and my heartiest regards to you both. Rob, thank you. Good night. And at 11:05, Jane remembered none of the material she'd delivered since last break. Session 627, November 1, 1972. Reading from The Nature of Personal Reality, a Seth book by Jane Roberts. Continuing Chapter 5. The Constant Creation of the Physical Body. Seth, now, good evening. Rob, good evening, Seth. Seth, dictation. The body reacts not so much to physical sound as to the interior sounds into which the physical sounds are translated. As mentioned in the last two sessions, it also reacts to sounds that have no physical counterparts. There are certain properties within the structure of the chromosomes that must be activated by specific internal sound values. If this activation does not take place, then the attributes latent within the chromosomes remain so. There are chains of influence that are actually composed of inner values of sound that thread together, as it were, the complicated inner weavings of both the genes and the chromosomes. I am taking this slowly to explain it as simply as possible. Rob notes, yes, see the definition of genes and chromosomes in the 610th session in Chapter 1. Seth, these sound values are literally interwoven in an electromagnetic pattern. The sounds weave, Rob notes gesturing, themselves through and help form this pattern. The activity of cells within the body also causes what you might call minute explosions of interior sound. The electromagnetic and inner sound patterns are impinged upon by certain kinds of light. Together, these all form the prototype upon which and out of which the physical body is formed. Now, when you create a mental image in your mind, it is composed of the same properties just mentioned. A mental image, then, is also a pattern of internal sound with electromagnetic properties imbued with certain light values. In a sense, a very real one. A mental image is incipient matter, and any structure so composed, combining the electromagnetic sound and light values, will automatically try to reproduce itself in physical existence or materialization. There is a definite connection, then, with the nature of such images and the way in which your body itself is composed. Electrons, atoms, and molecules all have their independent interior sounds and light values. There are different sounds produced when messages leap from your nerve ends. It is very difficult to explain some of this, but there is invisible light, then, and inaudible sound that affects your body and helps form the pattern about which it constantly emerges. The body is obviously continually created during your present lifetime in your terms. It is not a mechanism once created, then left to fend for itself. You were not given a certain amount of life force at birth that you use up as you go along, contrary to many schools of thought. The atoms and molecules within you are quite literally dying and being completely replaced all the time. You are being created physically each instant, period. The body reacts to exterior sounds and to stimuli brought to it by the physical senses. These patterns of reaction can be clearly shown. They are all that is presently observable, however, of far greater interactions that also occur. The atoms and molecules that compose your cells and your flesh, for instance, do not react to the physical sounds that you hear or to the light patterns that your physical eyes perceive. In times of danger, your entire body must be able to move swiftly. The hormonal system must react with great rapidity, sometimes completely changing the balance of a moment earlier. The muscles must be immediately alert, and the entire body flexible enough to respond as a whole. This includes every organ and the most minute portion. Say you are in the middle of a street and suddenly a car is about to hit you. It has come seemingly from nowhere. The cells that compose your intestines, your heart, your muscles obviously do not see the car as you do. Yet the whole system must be instantly activated, and the data that you perceive must be translated in terms that will energize every portion of your body. This is done by translating exterior stimuli into interior stimuli. But the physical carriers of the data are all that scientists or physicians have been able to follow thus far. The greater interactions have not been perceived, and the true story of the decoding of such messages has not been understood. Take your break. Rob notes Jane's trance had developed into quite a profound one, but typically she was soon out of it. Wow, he's going to town tonight, she exclaimed. He gave me a break only now because he's going into something new and he doesn't want to interrupt it. I couldn't tell you what that was about, and yet I have an idea. I think Seth wishes I had a better vocabulary for body things. Resume at 9:57. Seth, now. The nerves are also composed of the same kind of interior structures as mentioned earlier, around or rather from which the physical nerves form. Here the exterior pattern is translated and broken down into inner terms. That is, it is decoded in terms of the internal sound, light, and electromagnetic patterns discussed before. It then becomes usable information, even in terms of the atoms and molecules that compose the cells. The physical lapse that occurs between an incoming message and its intended destination does not occur on these other levels. The interior message gets to its destination ahead of the physical one. By the time the organism responds, the inner patterns have already reacted, and this must and always does precede any physical response to stimuli. Therefore, the invisible body pattern, composed of its interior light, sound, and electromagnetic properties, reacts first and actually initiates the later physical response. There is always this translation of exterior stimuli. The perceived lapse, noted by scientists, is of course the physical one, caused by the time it takes a message to leap the nerve endings. The interior translation, however, is simultaneous. Now, return in your mind to the situation of the near accident. That event with the car, its driver, and your own precarious position exists as another structure besides the one that you physically see. It also, the event, exists in the terms mentioned earlier, in a reality composed of invisible light, inaudible sound, and electromagnetic patterns. Consciously, you react to the physical data. The noise, the squeal of brakes perhaps, the visual shock of seeing the car so close, but the entire inner reality of that scene or event is instantly recognized by what I refer to as your inner senses. These respond to the interior patterns I've told you about. The physical data is carried through the nerves with the necessary time lapses that must occur. These represent the temporal end of the spectrum of perception. Because you are flesh and blood creatures, the interior aspects of perception must have their physical counterparts. But material awareness of the bodily response to it would be impossible were it not for these internal web works. Now, before you see anything physically, you do so through these inner pathways. The interior perception activates the outer one. When you experience physical motion or activity, events or phenomena, you are becoming aware of the tail end of a long series of interior comprehensions. I am saying that all exterior events, including your own bodies, with their insides, All objects, all physical materializations, are the outside structures of inside ones that are composed of interior sound and invisible light interwoven in electromagnetic patterns. Beneath temporal perception, then, each object and event exists in these terms, in patterns that interact with each other. On a physical level, you seem to be separated from everything that is not yourself. This is not true, but in your day-to-day existence it may seem to be, and it is an assumption that you usually take for granted. On the interior level, of which I have been speaking, all happenings and objects are connected. A movement or change in one affects others. You will physically respond to and recognize some of this alteration, as in the example of the near accident. But whether or not you are consciously aware of such activity, it changes the interior environment of your body through these inner pathways. Your own thoughts and beliefs, having the same kind of inner reality, also transform the interior environments of others. The near accident mentioned was a physical event, but it was initially a mental one. It existed in this non-temporal reality there before, in your terms. It was physically materialized, perceived, and reacted to. It was propelled from inner reality to outward reality through belief, emotion, and imagination. Because you cannot see them, it may seem to you that these qualities are not as real, say, as an object. Physically, you can only see the results of an emotion, for instance. You cannot hold it in your hand as you can a stone. Ideas represent your psychic intent. They generate emotion and imagination. These activate the interior patterns. They are the motive force of action, the means by which all interior events are exteriorized. They are energy formed and directed, formulations of interior and exterior patterns of reality. They are a part of the creative force from which all realities spring. Again, we run into difficulties in explanation simply because there are few verbal equivalents for what I am trying to say. Imagination and emotions are the most concentrated form of energy that you possess as physical creatures. Any strong emotions carries with it far more energy than, say, that required to send a rocket to the moon. Emotions, instead of propelling a physical rocket, for example, send thoughts from this interior reality through the barrier between non-physical and physical into the objective world. No small feat, and one that is constantly repeated. You may take a break. Rob notes, "Boy, I'm telling you, I was out of that time. I really was," Jane said. "The house could have fallen down, I think. I had that thing again, where you're in it so deep that you're a part of it. The feeling where you're in the guts of things. It's a real weird kind of inner focus. There's a great kind of fulfilling sense of triumph doing it, like you're pulling stuff out of the secret nature of things. I can't say where you go or what you do. After all this time, I'm still amazed that this book comes out all finished," she said. "Usually I don't want anyone else around for this. You cut out everything else. Other people would cause you to pick up on them or be distracted." Seth had something to say about this last thought not long ago. The following quotes are extracted from some deleted material. Quote, "Generally speaking, it is better if the book dictation is done alone, or with those with whom you are well acquainted and easy. This is simply because there are less psychic distractions, and it is easier for Rupert to focus into one clear channel. The needs and desires of others naturally enter in," Seth continued, "and some energy must be used to close them out. The more interested and excited witnesses are, of course, the more their own concerns ring out. It is difficult for Rupert to block out these additional psychic distractions. With strangers, the sessions are often personal, however, because their own emotional reactions are so vibrant initially." And Rob continues to note, supplementing Seth's mention of the inner senses during the last delivery, "He's told us about 9 of these so far, and a list of them can be found in Chapter 19 of the Seth material. There are more to come, too. This break it developed marked the end of the book dictation. Seth returned with other material, though, and the session lasted until 11:45. Section 626, November 8, 1972. Reading from The Nature of Personal Reality, a Seth book by Jane Roberts, continuing Chapter 5. Good evening. Rob, good evening, Seth. Seth, dictation. Paused, then humorously. And aside for you. Now you see, I can speak in time or out of it. Underline time. Rob, yes. Seth. The physically alive body, its activities and condition, are directed through the beliefs of the conscious mind. The body, as explained in this chapter, also has invisible counterparts composed of the electromagnetic properties and interior sound and light qualities. These invisible structures preceded the emergence of the physical body. They also exist after the body's death. While the condition of the body is directed by the conscious mind in life, then, the idea or mental pattern for the body existed before the conscious mind's connection with the physical brain. The genes and chromosomes do not just happen to have within them the precisely definite coded information that will be needed. The data is impressed upon them from within. The identity exists before the form. You can say that the identity existed in another dimension entirely, plants the seed into the medium of physical reality from which its own material existence will spring. Therefore, the inner self forms first the invisible body structure, which will later emerge in flesh. At the event of this mental seeding, the conscious mind, in your terms, is obviously not connected with the brain, which has not yet been formed in flesh. The idea of body is held and made physical by a conscious mind. New paragraph. Consciousness, then, is not dependent upon physical perception, though this attribute does require an awareness immersed within a material form. While physical consciousness is sifted through the bodily apparatus, you are usually unaware of the non-corporeal kinds because of that process. The general framework, properties, and characteristics of the body exist, therefore, before its formation. In simple terms, you choose ahead of time the kind of body you will inhabit and impress. It may seem to you that you do not have any conscious control over your body's condition in life as you know it, much less before your birth. You have been taught that there is little connection between your thought and your body's activities. A man believing he has heart trouble will finally, through his own anxiety, affect the functioning of his involuntary system until his heart is definitely harmed, if the belief goes unchecked. The conscious mind directs the so-called involuntary systems of the body, and not the other way around. No idea slips insidiously past your awareness to affect your involuntary system unless it fits in with your own conscious beliefs. Once more, you will not be sick if you think you are well. But there may be other ideas that make you believe in the necessity for poor health. You are not aware of how the body performs its many involuntary functions. The conscious mind could not handle all that data, but those functions perfectly mirror your consciously held ideas and beliefs. As I mentioned in Section 614, session in Chapter 2, the conscious mind is not basically cut off from the inner self or from those deep inner sources of knowledge available to it. The aware mind is not any one event, for that matter. It represents various portions of the inner self that surface at any given time. Within the basic framework of the body chosen before physical birth, for reasons that will be discussed later, the individual has full freedom to create a perfectly healthy functioning form. The form is, however, a mirror of beliefs, and will accurately materialize in flesh those ideas held by the conscious mind. Rob notes Jane's delivery was very serious and somewhat loud. She leaned forward and tapped upon the coffee table between us, her eyes wide and dark. Seth, underlined, this is one of the body's primary functions. A sick body is performing that function, then, in a way as well as a healthy one. It is your most intimate feedback system, changing with your thought and experience, giving you in flesh the physical counterpart of your thought. So it is futile to become angry at a symptom or to deride the body for its condition when it is presenting you with the corporal replica of your own thought, as it was meant to do. Your environment and your experience in the physical world also provide you with the same kind of feedback. It is just as useless to berate your environment or your experience in it as it is to deride your body for the same reasons. It often seems, when such ideas as these are presented, that the idea results in your terms would be perfection, heaven on earth, a state in which everyone would be healthy, wealthy, and wise. Rob notes, "Now Seth asked me to open a beer for Jane. I don't want to give him a break yet," he added, the him stemming from Jane's male entity name, Rupert. It was obvious that Jane was in a very deep trance. Our house was turning noisy, but she showed no signs whatever of unease. Instead, she sat quietly waiting for me to pick up my notebook. Seth, "You are, however, in physical existence using your body as a medium for learning and expression. You are quite unique. Many of you, for your own reasons, pursue courses that do not involve an even development of abilities, an overall balanced picture, for example, but choose to express and experiment with certain qualities to the exclusion of others. Such a course would not, in physical reality, present you with anything like a balanced picture of perfection. Later in the book, we will discuss other kinds of existence in which you are also involved, and these to some extent color your intents and purposes in physical life as you now understand it. If all of your beliefs, not just your fortunate ones, were not materialized, you would never thoroughly understand on a physical level that your ideas create reality. If only your positive beliefs were materialized, then you would never clearly comprehend the power of your thought, for you would not completely experience its physical results. The conscious mind exists before the material life and after it. In corporal existence, it is intertwined with the brain, and during physical life, your earthly perceptions. Your precise and steady focus within your particular space and time system are dependent upon that fine alliance. Before physical birth, then, you form a mental concept of the body you will have. This image is impressed into matter in this way. You tune yourself into a highly specific dimension of reality. You form a physical structure that will have existence within the intensely concentrated area, that will have validity and actuality, that will come alive within those frequencies. Rob notes very positively. Seth, now, it is here that the seeming division of the self occurs. For in physical life, the conscious mind must be connected with the brain, and in terms of time, that organ itself must grow and develop. So all of your consciousness cannot be physically aware. The portion that must wait for the brain's development is the part you call in life the conscious mind. The other portions can be called the inner self. Now all of this inner self cannot become expressed even with its connection with the brain, since the brain must sift perception through the physical apparatus. You may take your break. Because of the noise distractions in the house, I kept Rupert in trance longer. It is easier that way. Rob notes, Jane's hour-long trance had indeed developed into a profound one. "Man, have I been out," she said, trying to keep her eyes open. She finally gave up and leaned back in her rocker. "Are you tired of writing?" I said I wasn't. "Well, I guess we'll go on then," she said. She took off her glasses. Seth returned in a few moments. As soon as he did, Jane's eyes became wide open, and her manner grew animated and intense once more. Resume at 10:10. Seth, the brain with its bodily connections must deal with the time lapses that sensual perception always imply. The interior workings of the body, to be conscious, would have to deal with time sequences that would present the physically attuned consciousness with mathematical deductions and calculations far too numerous for it to handle. For example, it would have to keep conscious track of all the muscles, nerves, organs, cells, molecules, and atoms, while manipulating the body in space and time. Therefore, a seeming division occurs, in which a portion of the invisible conscious mind is connected with the physical brain, and a portion of it is free of that condition. That latter part forms what you think of as the involuntary system of the body. Again, it is important that you realize the initial non-physical reaction to stimuli that sparks off all physical reactions. There is constant interplay and communication between the areas of consciousness that are connected to the brain and those that are not. The deeper purposes of the consciousness involve circulate, sometimes arising in the awareness that is joined with the brain. Information coming from those deeper sources of the self, reaching the areas connected to the brain, will be interpreted according to the beliefs of that most physically focused segment of the self. To some degree, such inner data will be colored by the current beliefs of that part of the self most directly confronting the physical world. Those beliefs, however, are also constantly being examined by the inner self. And now I suggest that you end the session. Rob notes, "All right," I said, in some surprise. Seth, "But we have a good portion of the material through. So," smiling, "count your blessings." End 1027. Jane slowly emerged from a deeply dissociated state. The rather abrupt end of the session came, she finally said, just because she had been tiring. This proved to be the end of Chapter 5.